From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. It is said that parenting is the hardest job in the world. Just raising kids to be well-balanced, well-functioning, independent individuals is hard enough. But what about teaching children your values? Progressive parents want to see their own values of compassion, empathy, collectivism, anti-racism, and so on passed on to their children. But if it's one thing children can be, it's rebellious. Often, pushy parents can turn their kids off of what they espouse. Examples abound of children choosing the opposite paths that their parents hoped for them. So how do we instill a social conscience in our kids without it backfiring? My guest is Steve Early. He's a journalist, lawyer, labor organizer, and union representative. His writing has appeared in The Nation, The Boston Globe, The New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, Wall Street Journal, and more. He's the author of several books, including Save Our Unions, Dispatches from a Movement in Distress, and Refinery Town, Big Oil, Big Money, and the Remaking of an American City. He just wrote an article in Jacobin magazine called Room to Grow. Welcome to the program, Steve.
Thanks for having me on again.
So I'm assuming you have children?
I do. I'm a father of two daughters, both of them in their early 30s, and both of them activists. One works for healthcare reform, and the other is a union organizer and rep out here in the Bay Area.
So my father is an architect and believed in a very American dream style, had this very American dream, even though he wasn't in the United States. And his father was a communist, a leader of the Communist Party in India, one of the founders of the Communist Party, strong Marxist. And so it skipped a generation, obviously. And it's so often where we find these things happening, where you have kids turning out quite different from what their parents either hoped to be or simply, you know, just seeing their parents push certain values on them, they went the other way. You, in your article in Jacobin magazine, cite the case of David Horowitz. Tell us his story.
Well, I was much impressed by David Horowitz's story in the 1980s, the early 90s, because that's when I was starting to face the challenges of parenting, along with my wife, Suzanne Gordon, raising our two daughters. And David Horowitz had been someone that was very well known on the left in the U.S. as a leader of the new left in the 1960s, a leading anti-imperialist writer and critic, anti-war campaigner, supporter of the Black Panthers. And he was a red diaper baby. He had been raised by Communist Party parents in Queens. His parents were public school teachers. But by the 1980s and 90s, he was moving to the right. He came out for Ronald Reagan for president. More recently, he's been a Trump supporter. And I think, he published a memoir in which he blamed his parents, probably unfairly, for pushing him too hard in the direction of Marxist politics and setting up what appears to have been a continuing reaction formation of against his poor parents as he has become more and more a major figure on the extreme right.
Now, you also cite a couple of books in your article about sort of memoirs about growing up with militant parents, one of them by Richard March. He wrote a book, A Great Vision, A Militant Family's Journey Through the 20th Century. And then Peter Andreas, who wrote Rebel Mother, My Childhood, Chasing the Revolution. Again, both of them, these sort of red diaper babies. This is a term that maybe younger people or younger parents might not be as familiar with today, but back when, it was a very easy thing on the left here in the United States to identify overtly with communism and the Communist Party, children of communist parents were called red diaper babies. How did these two stories of these two books that you cite show different paths?
Well, the authors were born a generation apart. Richard March's parents were formidable union builders and community organizers in Chicago in the packing house industry and neighborhoods around the packing houses in the 1930s and 40s. Richard came of age during the 1960s, was a new leftist himself, And as his memoir indicates, had a very strong positive connection to his parents, admired them, respected them. They let them apparently find his own way. He did end up with some political differences, I would say, that are reflected in the book. But together as a family, more traditional nuclear family, they weathered some really terrible attacks during the McCarthy era of the 1950s, when his father was driven out of the union movement, blacklisted, and forced to take up different kind of work. You know, Peter Andreas' story was a very different setting. His mom was a New Leftist. Peter was deeply affected by a very bitter custody dispute between his mom, who became more militant and more left, his dad, who was a more traditional Midwestern parent, had a headquarters job at the United Auto Workers. Peter's mom spirited him off to South America, where he had a series of adventures in revolutionary settings in two or three countries, which he recounts in the book, with some ambivalence about the way that he was raised by his rebel mother, as he calls her.
And you cite that he found out after she died that she was deeply disappointed that her son didn't adhere enough to the class struggle, wasn't as committed as she was. Yet, of course, he grew up to be a compassionate person.
I found that to be really terribly sad. And again, yeah. I think one of the cautionary lessons of these books, you know, we shouldn't be too heavy with our own expectations of how our kids turn out. And certainly not try to, in heavy-handed fashion, impose our own political worldviews on them. Peter, as he was growing up, for example, had an internship at the Left-Wing Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., and developed an interest in research and writing. He's a professor today of international studies at Brown University. He got on the academic track. His mom was very suspicious of anything connected with Washington, D.C., and the policy world of think tanks, and was even critical, as he discovered later, of his summer internship at the Institute for Policy Studies, which most left parents would have been very proud of. I think it was sad that she could not take joy and satisfaction in her son's own development and career and later in life success.
I think that it's important for us to sort of distinguish between progressive ideals and conservative ideals, because we know, for example, that conservatism is linked to strict households. The well-known cognitive scientist George Lakoff talks about how strict father models end up producing very kind of conservative people who like to have an authoritarian figure, you know, who promises to fix everything for them. And I'm wondering if the opposite of that is true, that parents who don't have that sort of super strict framework and atmosphere in the home where children are allowed to question, allowed to find their own path, allowed to experiment with different ideologies and explore on their own, may naturally gravitate, because of their own humanity, toward empathy, toward seeing all human beings as being part of a community.
I would agree. I think an overly authoritarian mama or papa on the left or the right can definitely put kids in a different direction. And it's a much healthier approach, the one you just described, of exposing kids to progressive ideas and activities and good values. But let them decide to what degree they want to be an activist or a non-activist, what kind of job they want to get, what kind of person they want to marry, what they want to spend their life doing. Because I think the results will be better when the parents don't try to plot a course for kids and give them some space to find their own path.
So you also cite in your article the book by Ava Siegler, who wrote a book that I think many people might, many parents in today's day and age might be interested in getting. And it's called How Do I Explain This to My Kids? Parenting in the Age of Trump. What advice does she dispense? And did any of her suggestions resonate with how you raised your children? Obviously, you had some success.
Well, it's a terrific new collection from New Press. I'd highly recommend it. It includes contributions from about 15 or 20 different writers and activists and academics in response to the horrific role model of our current president and the challenges that that creates for parents involved in the resistance, as it's called, and also raising children who in some cases have good reason to fear directly and personally the bullying and the narcissism and the all the malign behavior coming from the White House. So this book is a very, very relevant guide. I think Dr. Siegler says, however, if you're recruiting your kids into the resistance, you know, do it with some degree of balance. Don't drag them against their will to every picket line, rally, protest, meeting. Try to make it fun and try to balance those activities with other things that they may be interested in doing. Sports, having sleepovers with their friends, you know, going on non-political trips and outings. I think that's the advice you'd spend.
You're saying that if every field trip is to a political rally or meeting or protest, that may not be the best way to encourage your kids to embrace your values?
No, I think she's saying it's not an everyday thing. You want to achieve some sort of balance, help the kids achieve some sort of balance in their own life and perhaps in your own, where there's a mix of personal and political activities within the family. And everything isn't about the fight back, the class struggle, the resistance, because kids need the space to grow up and be kids. At the same time, they're learning about some pretty grim stuff in our world today under the presidency of Donald Trump.
Now, this seems to be an approach that could hold true for so many other things, such as religion or culture. You know, children who might be raised in a household with strict religious values, where there's, you know, an organized religion that the family adopts and the kids are dragged to church or temple or whatever against their will, may end up producing kids who go completely the other direction. Similarly to culture, I remember as growing up, both my parents were somewhat ambivalent about religion, celebrated festivals, but in a fairly secular way. And one day when I decided I wanted to explore Christianity, my father said, "That's great, go for it. And tell me what you come up with," instead of holding me back. And eventually I found my way away from that, right? Because I was only interested in it because I had friends who would go to church and I was jealous. I feel like if we can apply that same model of parenting to progressivism, to activism, to our children, where if they find that they're being dragged into something against their will, they're going to associate it with negative feelings that they're experiencing.
Yeah, no, I think your dad handled that. Fastball.
A month later, I wanted to explore Buddhism, but
very well. You know, letting people explore, find out more, do things with their friends. Our kids went to churches and synagogues with various of their friends. My wife and I are non-believers, but we didn't make that, you know, a mandatory subject of propagandizing in the house. And you know, the degree to which they considered themselves as young women spiritual today, you know, that's their call, not ours.
There's also, of course, the issue of culture. There are immigrant parents who have children who are second generation immigrants might find that forcing your child to speak the hometown, you know, your mother tongue, your native language, forcing them to adopt the cultural norms that you want them to grow up with, again, might end up backfiring. I'm experiencing that with my own children and finding that when I back off from having them be interested in Indian culture, they come to it much more naturally and much more enthusiastically. Steve, I want to ask you something that's, I think you didn't, I think, touch upon it in your article, but I think it's a really important issue that people are thinking about today, and which is the issue of racism. We live in very segregated communities. Even many progressives live in very racially segregated communities. And it's not easy to raise children who are very strongly anti-racist if they aren't being exposed to children of other races in schools or in their communities. What are your thoughts on raising anti-racist children?
Well, clearly, if parents feel this is the right decision for their kids, and I hope it is in most places, putting kids in public schools is one way to expose them in many communities to other kids from different families, different cultures, native and foreign born, black and white, Asian, Latino. Obviously, that's situational, class base, you know, where does the family live? What's the demographics of the community the kids are growing up in? But I think one of the disturbing things about the charter school trend is the way that you have a kind of divide and conquer privatization strategy. You end up with less of the kind of mix that I experienced positively as a public school student in New York State many years ago. Getting to meet and know people in the public school system of the town where I grew up, who I would not have had any contact with if a thing like charter schools had been invented then, or if I'd been sent to a prep school or a Catholic school, which was another option, thankfully, that my parents rejected. So public schools, public education, sticking up for that, that's one way, I think, for people to get on the road to an acceptance and awareness and an understanding of differences and what we need to do about them.
And then it certainly seems to hold true as well that one of the best ways to have your kids follow in your path, if that's what you want, is to live your own life as an example to them, right? If you want them to be anti-racist, practice anti-racism in front of them, challenge racist stereotypes in front of them. If you want them to be an activist, let them see you be an activist. Let them see you be moved by the things that move you in the world. Expose them to how you are living your life. And rather than tell them you want them to grow up that way, simply seeing you go through it may encourage them, because children do naturally admire their parents and see them as role models, you know, in an ideal situation.
I think the role modeling, if handled with a light touch, again, you know, making the politics more voluntary than a mandatory subject is key, because parents for 18 more years spend a lot of time with their kids and vice versa. They can be important role models.
Did you talk politics at the dinner table with your kids growing up?
Well, I think, with two adults prone to do that, it was kind of hard to avoid. But again, I think in a way that, left things open for questions, disagreement, changes of subject. How did the soccer team do? How did the softball team do? What's going on in this class or that class at school? And again, I think it's a question of balance, and too much of a steady diet of one subject matter at the dinner table can not be helpful.
So you brought politics into the conversation naturally. It wasn't an assignment at dinner time.
Yeah, and I think over time, kids start to hopefully read newspapers and watch the TV news and follow current affairs to one degree or another. And then when things happen in the world, as they did when my daughters were in high school and the first Iraq war was launched, Bush administration, I think in 2003, they participated in a high school walkout over high school student protest in Massachusetts about the U.S. going to war in Iraq.
And they did that entirely on their own?
Without
you necessarily pushing them to?
No, didn't even know about it until afterwards. They
wow.
Came flush. Well, we walked out. We marched around.
You must have been proud.
If somebody had said, you have to do this, they might have played hooky.
Yeah. And also finally then, Steve, it also seems like maybe parents tend to put very high expectations on their children to begin with. Maybe progressive parents might do that a little bit more because we are ardent and passionate. And so also kind of having maybe a healthy sense of allowing them to be who they are and understanding that they may choose a path that's different from yours. As long as it isn't virulently, conservative, that it's okay to have some differences, that it's okay for them to be who they are, because in the end, they are individuals who are, have their own lives.
Very definitely. And I think parents sometimes make mistakes, well-intentioned ones, around educational expectations. Obviously, you want your kids to get enough of an education to be able to get jobs that they're happy with and that can support them later in life. But you know, college and university isn't for everybody, and it shouldn't be. You know, people going to technical school, becoming an apprentice, learning a trade. There's lots of different ways that people can find a career path. And I think one mistake the parents made, progressive or otherwise, is putting too much pressure on kids to, you know, get onto the college acceptance treadmill, the rat race, and adds a lot of pressure to their lives unnecessarily in high school.
Well, Steve, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article from our website so our audience can get a hold of it and read it themselves. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on again.
My guest has been Steve Early, journalist, lawyer, labor organizer, and union representative. His writing has appeared in The Nation, The Boston Globe, New York Times, and many other publications. We've been discussing his latest article in Jacobin magazine. It's called Room to Grow, about what parents should and shouldn't do to raise progressive, compassionate kids. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.